The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. We are at episode 57. And today I have a guest that I want to introduce you all to. His name is Timothy. He's from Idaho. But before we get started, just a little housekeeping notes. As always, this podcast is brought to you by thetexasboys.com. Check us out over there. Currently, we can only accept PayPal. We're in the process of rewriting and migrating our website to open source so that we can just have some better autonomy and more control over things. And so we're working on that. And second thing is we just announced July's meetup. That is July 6th from 10 to 2. That's going to be at Bob Wells Nursery at Sorella's Farms. You can check the links down below for all that information. For anyone that does attend the meetup, Bob Wells is going to be offering 10% off. So any fruit trees or whatever you want to buy from Bob Wells, you will get a 10% discount. And to the program, Timothy. Hey, Timothy, how you doing today, sir?
Good.
So a little backstory, Timothy emailed me and said, hey, I want to be on the podcast. And so we had a chance to talk for a couple minutes and I said, that sounds great. And in lieu and in light of this farmer water crisis in Idaho, I thought that would be kind of a cool thing we could talk about since you have a little bit of inside scoop there since you're in the area. But let's start out with your origin story. I guess you were originally from and in a densely populated area like the Pacific Northwest, maybe near Seattle, something like that. And something told you that you should move. And maybe you could kind of give us the backstory, Timothy.
Yeah, for sure. First thing, I emailed you asking for some advice and mentoring. Then you were the one that was like, hey, let's get you on the podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have a great memory, so there
you go. No worries. So yeah, I was working in the medical field in Seattle, and then some requirements came around, as you guys know. And I was like, we just got to get, you know, the whole society over there was going down anyways. We knew we had to get out. So yeah, started looking for a job in a free area that was not, I mean, we looked all over North Carolina, Texas. I've got family around, ended up getting a pretty good job in Idaho. So we moved out here. We moved out a little bit out of the city. So there's some of a commute, but, set up our homestead and got out here and wanted to be independent. Wanted to, you know, there was some criteria. I needed land to graze animals and I needed a well. We are pretty big on getting off the grid. So we have the best water in the world here with our Ponderay aquifer. So those were kind of the requirements. We were just kind of just got pushed out from the city because we weren't following their rules or wanting to get their mandates.
So how many y'all are young family? How many children y'all have?
Yes. Yeah. We got four little kiddos and one in the oven right now.
Wow. Yep. Wow. And you just like up and moved and said, hey, I'm going to grow my own food and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We left. So we were in the suburbs of Seattle and we had half an acre, but thankfully our neighborhood was old enough. We didn't have HOAs or CCRs. So we were running meat chickens, laying chickens, pigs, bees, everything from our half acre lot. All our neighbors just thought we were crazy, just butchering right in our front yard, feathers going everywhere. Everyone's freaking out, but they couldn't say anything. That was part of getting out of there. So we moved out here and just really kind of were able to quadruple our production on what we run.
That's awesome. So you were doing what you could where you were at with what you had. And so you were learning the skills. This is really important. You know, everybody's like, oh, I want to do this. And where should I move? And how should I move? And what kind of animal should I get? Well, the best advice is use what you have, where you're at with what you got, and develop the skills, right? So before you dive into the deep end. So it wasn't as scary to y'all when you're like, okay, we need some elbow room. We need some space. Maybe we need some freedom and less tyranny. So you walked to freedom. You didn't have to travel that far. It's kind of amazing to think about that. But in America, we still can walk to freedom for now. Yeah. Anyway, and might as well take advantage of that. And you had been honing and developing these skills. So that way, once you had more room and more autonomy and more space, you could scale. And it wasn't like this crazy daunting thing. And even though you had little ones, you made it happen. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We've always done everything as a family. But I would definitely even just start small. If anyone's looking at, there's no, like, you don't gotta, if you want meat chickens, try butchering one chicken, you know, just you and your wife, the kids, get out there. That's what we did. Like our first, a friend of mine had a rooster he couldn't keep. And we're like, well, let's give this a go. You know, that was, I don't know, 8 years ago. And now we can do, you know, my wife and I can easily do 30 chickens before breakfast or around, you know, breakfast time. Like, wow. Yeah, just start small, start with one, figure it out, and then slowly scale from there.
That's great. So, okay. So you moved to Idaho. You had some backyard chicken action and you had all kind of critters and you were processing there in the suburbs. So how did you scale? So, okay. What size property do you currently have?
Yeah, it's pretty small here. So we currently have 5 acres and it's an old hay field. So it's, when we moved in, there was half a tree on our property. That's all we had, just all flat grass. We've started planting bushes and trees. I mean, nothing near your food forest, but we got some apple trees going, got a bunch of blueberries going. My wife built a pretty good sized garden. And then we rotate the animals throughout the 5 acres. They kind of just follow each other. Our egg layers are, they pretty much go wherever they want. They're free. But then I just pull my meat layers around in a chicken tractor, and same with the turkeys and ducks. They'll be out there too. So
you're running turkeys and ducks, and do you have a couple cows, I think you
said? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We had 3 steer. One of them just ended up in the freezer. They're kind of bigger. They're Angus. One's a belted Galloway and I had 2 red Angus, but I think with this property, it's a bit too much, I think, for 5 acres. Cause we have really hard winters. So I think after these guys are gone, I'm going to switch to maybe like a lowland or something a little bit smaller.
Yeah. 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 And that's kind of what we're doing. We switched to a low-line Hereford, and then I got some full-size black Angus. So we're going to cross them to hopefully get some Baldies. That's what we're looking to replenish our herd with. And just looking for the higher conversion ratio. But, you know, you want them to eat, obviously, as minimal as possible. And so you're rotating all your critters in some type of cycle.
Yeah. Last year it was definitely more rotation. We had a really bad plague of grasshoppers. So there's more rotation last year with just 2 steer this year. I'm kind of just letting them go to town because it's grass is growing like crazy. And we're still getting a bunch of storms and rain. It's been a really cold spring. So if things start drying up, yeah. I'll limit the steer from going around. But right now my steer have full rein of the 5 acres.
So how do you confine them? With electric fence, electric wire?
Yep. Yep. I just have some little posts put out. I throw a little electric wire out, just a small solar charger. If they've got feed, they don't really put pressure on the fences or anything. It's only when stuff starts drying up, then they start putting pressure and questioning the fences and questioning the electric.
Yeah. And you were telling me that you had a relatively inexpensive hay up there. Isn't too crazy bad, right? It's not too crazy expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're running steer, I mean, we're just surrounded by hay.
That's crazy.
Just potatoes and hay. So if you're fine with bottom bales, you can get it pretty cheap.
Awesome. That is really cool. Well, maybe, hey, let's get into the whole water thing and these water rights. And kind of like, for those of you that don't know, I think it was Trinity Vandenacre just recently was interviewing, I think it was somebody from Idaho, and talking about these water rights and how it's fascinating how this stuff works. And these water rights are like deeded like way back in the 1800s. And that's like the priority you get is depending on your water deed, and lowest guy on the totem pole gets turned off first. So what kind of experience, Timothy, do you have with all that? I know you said one of your buddies got shut off.
Yeah. I've got a buddy down in central Idaho. He had his water shut off prior to even getting a letter. Apparently the letter was in the mail, is what they said. They shut his water, his irrigation water is what they shut off. And then, his residence, his home is ran. It's the same community well that runs his residence. And so after being on the phone all day and the whole community complaining, they ended up turning the water back on because they didn't realize how many people's homes were tied to that same well. But yeah, it all started with our wonderful governor and a concern from the power company. I'm trying to remember, is that the Snake River? I think it might be this. Yeah, it was the power company that brought it forward, and they said, hey, we're going to have to renegotiate these water rights because they expire every year or whatever, or every 10 years or whatever. And it's coming up to that time. And they said, because of climate change and global warming, we need to start shutting down irrigation, even though we've got like the most water we've ever had. This is just an amazing year for rainfall.
Wow.
They decided to start shutting people down.
Wow. That's so crazy. And I was reading some stuff about this. Is this about, I could have swore I read somewhere that it has to do with cobalt mining, or there's cobalt minerals there in Idaho. Do you know anything about that?
Man, that's news to me, but we definitely are huge mining state. I mean, our everything around me, fishing, you got to really look into every stream, every river, because we've got mines from here to Montana that just ruin our rivers and ruin our lakes.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, this is like one of the big issues. You know, I guess I would call myself a conservative. I am definitely a libertarian, and I definitely have Christian ethos and ethic. I kind of hate the term conservative, because that whole entire dialectic has been completely co-opted by
Yeah. Oh, so you like Abraham Lincoln? You're a conservative. You're like,
whoa. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I kind of despise fascism, and I care very little for Abraham Lincoln and all of his fascism. But the one thing that gets lost in conservatism is the way that these multinational corporations are destroying the planet. And same thing with the military industrial complex, and they get a pass in the name of capitalism or whatever, because if you don't think that mega corporations and the military industrial complex can destroy the world. You're like a communist or a Marxist and you hate capitalism. But one thing that, and that's really what has kind of like destroyed the dialectic, in my opinion, as we can see right now with this whole left-right paradigm and how the left embraces and loves war and wants to fund it to the tune of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars and all these things. Meanwhile, regular Joes in Idaho are getting their water turned off. And it's like, what is that all about? We're having a bumper crop of water this year and people are getting their water turned off for the sake of, you know, mega corporations because, you know, we need to cool mega data centers, because that's one of the next shoes that are going to drop is they're absconding so much water to cool these spying data frames for, you know, they, them, and those and all that stuff. And so this is why water is so critical. And it's one of the reasons why we have, we sequester our gray water and do different things with all of that. And so,
yeah, it's pretty crazy. Our well, so I've got a super, so it's a private well that just me, it's on my property, but I share it with my neighbor. We're 430 feet deep. We're in the Ponderay Aquifer, and all year long, it's like 35, 36 degree water. Even in, it'll be 100 degrees outside, and I'm pulling up almost super cold water, like almost freezing water. And up in my area, the potato farms, they had to stop. They tried a couple times irrigating with well water, and they had to shut it down because it was killing all the potatoes, and they had to pump water from the Spokane, from the river, to irrigate the potatoes because the well water was too cold.
How about now?
Yeah, there we go.
Here's audio. I can hear. Yeah, sorry about that. I lost, we had a power outage and it dropped, and that was a little crazy.
Yeah, so I was worried about, we had a thunderstorm roll through and our power kept flashing. I was like, oh man, I'm going to get on a call with TD and my power's going to shut off.
Yeah, we had a real bad flash storm yesterday and the power was only out for a couple hours, so they're probably still working on it. But okay, we're back. So we were talking about the water issue there in Idaho.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how much everyone heard, but I mean, a lot of it seems just snaky with the power company going to our governor Little and trying to push these shutdowns before there was any real emergency or any need. They're getting into a time of renegotiating, but they wanted to make sure they could shut off the newer clients first, which are a lot of the smaller farms, because the big farms are the ones that have their established water rights. And those are all owned by big ag. It's just the little guys.
They also have the deep pockets to fight the shutoffs. And so basically it's whoever can file the most motions and lock it up in court gets to keep their water, and the little guy gets squeezed out, and that land never gets its water rights back.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not an emergency. Nobody knows the true backstory. Like, why are they doing this? We've got way more water than anyone needs right now. And, you know, if it was Colorado or Arizona, New Mexico, where they've got these farms where it's like, oh, these Middle Eastern companies are farming rice in U.S. soil or alfalfa, because it takes up too much water in their own country. You're like, hey, yeah, let's look into that. But shutting down my buddy's horse ranch, it is ridiculous.
So you moved, you had developed some skills, you moved with little children. And I mean, why wasn't that scary? Like, what, I mean, you just moved, or why weren't you afraid?
It was definitely scary. We're right next to all our family. We were literally where we lived over there near Seattle. We're 15 minutes from in-laws, brothers, sisters, everybody, both my parents, her parents. But we just knew we had to get our kids out of there. Like, our kids can't stay here, you know? And we need to get them to a place where we can raise them, where they can be free. And our first search was a church. So I was like, church and job. Like, I'm not going to move to a place that doesn't have a good church, and I'm not going to move to a place where I can't work, obviously. But as soon as Rona hit, we started traveling to, we were visiting everywhere, just kind of scoping things out where we'd want to live and visiting churches as we went. And we found a good church here, and the Lord just lined everything up. I had an interview and got a really good job in Coeur d'Alene, and worked out well. But it was rough. It was hard, you know, leaving family, leaving everybody.
Now, but, are you still working that same job?
No. So a year ago, I wrapped up that project, and then decided we wanted more time with the family, because I was working 6/12s, just all the time gone.
Yeah.
I went and got my own license and started working for myself. And that was one of the reasons why I first reached out to you. Is like, hey, you know, just want some advice on, I know your kids are starting their own business and you run the homestead. I'm starting now to finally start to sell some meat. I mean, we're at a point now on our homestead where we can provide all the meat for ourselves, but it'd be nice to, while we're doing that, sell some meat. So we're getting there.
Sure.
So.
And so how many, when you moved to Idaho, how many people did you know there?
I mean, I just had been emailing with this one pastor here and some of the elders. It was I didn't know anybody.
Didn't know
anybody.
So yeah, that's
I literally shot an email to this church and was like, hey, we're moving there. We're going to attend. We visited, you know, a year ago, and there was a bunch of dudes that showed up, helped like just unpacked all my family's crap. It was pretty cool. Like, nice people. Like, it's a really good community here.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's cool.
Yeah. You and I were joking, like, Texas, like when I was just in Texas a couple months ago, and it's the same kind of, everyone's, you know, you see some, if you make eye contact with somebody, you smile at them. And in Seattle, it's like, if you make eye contact with somebody, you will like, you better get ready to fight. <You
know? laughs> Yeah. We're from the Northeast, and it's the same exact vibe. For whatever reason, the coast, whether it's the left coast or the right coast, they're all relatively equivalent. And I look at Idaho as like the Texas of the North. So, So you guys have a serious cowboy culture up there, and just a cowboy community type, blue collar, salt of the earth kind of, well, just like you were saying, you know, everybody in Idaho says they're Christian, and it's the same thing in Texas, you know, doesn't necessarily make it the case, right. But you do have this culture, this polite culture, this culture that still cares about each other, where you can, create, good community. And, that's why we felt it was so important to do like a local meetup so that we can continue to grow community and do these different things and create a culture of, caring and help and instruction and the same thing, like foster these ideas of, entrepreneurism and, you know, brainstorm ideas for how we can not be self-sufficient but be interdependent on a local community so that we all don't have to do all the things and we all don't have to have all the equipment and all the infrastructure. But if you develop a community, that's what a community was. This is why communities built and established and grew themselves. You know, people moved to an area and then they gather as a community, as a collective, to work together and to barter and trade and interact. And one family has a surplus of one thing, another family has a surplus of another thing. One man has certain skills, another man has certain skills, different women, they all have these different skills, and collectively they're providing for their community. And that's really the way society exclusively was before Walmart. Yeah. And now that Walmart has been able to destroy all the local infrastructure, all the local mom and pops, just like Tractor Supply and their like globalist New World Order androgynous agenda that's just looking to siphon and pilfer off everything that's good about rural America and steal all those dollars and ship them to China. This is why getting back to basics, getting back to, you know, turning off the TV, rejecting pop culture, like literally being anti-culture, because our postmodern, post-truth culture is so deconstructed. It is why we literally have to be anti-culture, because our synthetic, artificial Walmart, concrete jungle, stack 'em, pack 'em, track 'em society has become so detached, so synthetic, so apathetic that many people still can't even, like, they fear the notion of having to dispatch and clean a chicken, let alone then to cook, have the ability to cook or clean or eat said chicken.
Yep.
And that's what's great when you have a young family with little kids and you work and you all buy in together and you're doing this whole natural process that was an absolute way of life by necessity. And it's returning to those origins with being connected to your food and knowing where it comes from, knowing what your food ate. It's much more important. The only way you'll know what you are eating is if you know what your food ate. And that's so important. And just so how many years have you been in Idaho?
So we've been here a little over two now.
Yep. 2 years. And in retrospect, what would you have done differently?
Oh, man. 10 years ago, if I would have just bought some property here. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, it's just skyrocketed everywhere. You know, staying down there in Texas. Like, you know, I mean, that's when you got in, I guess, 10 years ago down there.
But, yeah.
Oh, I could have bought the biggest ranch out here for a tiny little house in Seattle. And now it's, you know, it's getting equal, but we've only been in the game for maybe like 10 years. It was about 10 years ago when I started prepping and looking into it and like, holy smokes, what's going on with our food? What's going on with everything and what's in our food, you know? And that was when we started the process of prepping and then also homesteading.
Yeah. But I thought you said you were a Christian.
Yeah,
God's gonna take care of you. So what are you preparing for? It Armageddon,
right?
I kid because I care, and I'm just trying to invoke a thought to the listeners. But most of these listeners are going to already be down with what's up.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, even, you know, we've talked a little bit about theology. I think you and I are pretty much on the same page. Our churches are a little different, but I've got a lot of friends here that are more theonomic Christian nationalists. And they're like, bro, you say your home's in heaven, but you're doing all this prep work here. So I'm like, you can have both. Like, my hope can be in heaven, but I'm going to take care of my family as much as I can, you know?
I mean, that's what providing, and this is exactly what I mean when the pop culture has influenced society, and Walmart has, which is the same thing, they're mutually inclusive, has programmed society to think that, oh, well, when you need something, you go to Walmart and you get it. And, you know, this whole, you know, prepping is just fear mongering. Like, you're focused too much on the temporal. No, I'm focused on providing for my family. And in reality, if we turn the television off and turn off the bread and circuses and turn off the entertainment and don't go to the golf course or to the sports ball game or what have you, we have the time, ability, and monetary capability to be part of the life process and like raise and grow our own food and process our own food and teach our children. You know, you hear the cliche all the time, teach a man to fish, right? And right. This is the exact application of that principle. And there's so many biblical principles in sowing and reaping and pruning and being fruitful and all of these illustrations that point to husbandry and point to the homesteading process and being part of that process and that process creating abundance that you can share, that you can potentially sell, and all these different things. And it gets completely lost on mainstream Christianity. And you get scoffed at, like you really do start to feel like Noah, you know, and you're like, hey, literally everybody on the planet scoffed at Noah for building the ark. And they stopped scoffing when it started to rain. And in a very real way, it's very analogous. And all that is preparing for what is unknown, being a good steward of your time, your treasure, your talent, honing your skills that don't just benefit you, don't just benefit your wife and children, but benefit your community, right? And that's all part of being a Christian and having the wisdom of looking, knowing the times and the seasons. And I mean, didn't Christ like slam the Pharisees? He's like, you know, you can look at the sky and you know what the weather is, right? And it's the same exact thing. You know, no man knows when the day of Christ will return, but we can see the times and the seasons, and we know what some of that involves and entails. And we've read a book or two, and we've just done a cursory overview of history, and we've seen how what totalitarianism does and what tyranny does and what control the food, control the masses. And all we're doing is applying wisdom, foresight, and in my opinion, a large dose of the Holy Spirit. And that's just like, hey, I mean, we got a very, very concise burden to like, hey, you know, we need to move for the sake of our children, for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of our family. And then there was financial components. Like, we can't afford, I can project and I know that my children will not be able to afford to live here. So if they are to have any hope or chance of ever owning property, having their own house, getting married, and then therefore being fruitful and multiplying and all these things that we're commanded to do, they have any hope of doing that, I think we should move, you know. And there's this prevailing postmodern Christian thought, well, no, God will provide for you. So just ignore everything and have more faith and pray and stay put, and it'll magically happen for you.
Yeah, it's the work. People don't want to put in the work. I mean, even the Christian life, we're called. I mean, it's a calling to suffering. We're going to be you know, people are going to ridicule us and it's going to be hard, but you get to work, you put in the hard work and do it, you know, by the grace of God, he sustains us. Same with the homestead. People want to, you know, or move into Idaho. People shame on that or want, but it's just, they want the easy life. They want to go to the grocery store, go to Subway every day, get your little sandwich and feed yourself. They, you know, it's not easy filling the freezer or waking up, pulling the chickens around, feeding the pigs, making sure everybody's lined up so you can go to work.
And it's not supposed to be easy. It never was easy. It was never easy till Walmart. You know, and now what makes it easy is seed oils and ultra processed foods and bug protein and plastic wrappers and cardboard boxes and microwaves. And without that, it's still not easy. It shouldn't be easy. It's not cheap. It shouldn't be cheap. And unless you want a Walmart body and a Walmart mind and you want little Walmart kids, and you want to be cogs in the machine for the technocratic, you know, transnational mega corporation that wants to turn your water off. You know, you need to be involved in the process. And here I can attest to the fact that 10 years into the future now, you know, we had all these ideas and impressions and thoughts and worries and fears. And the only thing I maybe wish I did is if we could have done it sooner, but there was a lot of things in that process leading up to it that kind of had to happen. So I wouldn't even say that we could have done it sooner per se. But I can tell you that I do not regret any of the decisions that we have made concerning moving and rearing and raising our children here. It has been incredibly challenging, very difficult. There's an enormous amount of unknowns and a lot of things that were completely unpredictable. But God is faithful. God is good. He blesses obedience. He blesses faithfulness. And the other thing that this whole whatever you want to call it, that's happened in the last 4 years has taught us anything is, once again, to reject pop culture, to completely and utterly reject the mainstream, reject all of its entertainment, all of its psychological propaganda. And what's really neat is when and as you do all that, it does free up all this time to do the things that are a much higher priority and have pay much better long-term dividends, and to watch your children flourish and grow and mature and learn and grow in the grace and knowledge of God and develop skills and abilities to be a productive proponent of society and to give back to society. It is, I mean, it's Christian living. It is, it's the Bible in action. And I honestly don't see how you can do it if you're going to shop at Walmart and lean on, you know, man shall not live by bread alone, except the bread from the Walmart aisle or whatever, you know what I mean? And that's a lot of people's, that is what they're counting on. And we've seen supply chain disruptions. We've seen all these things happen in real time. And now in the United States of amnesia, oh, well, that was 4 years ago. I don't even know if my five-year-old remembers that. You know what I mean? And well, it happened once, and it will probably, if history teaches us anything, it'll happen again.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I remember when that was happening, and I had, you know, a bunch of buckets of vacuum sealed toilet paper. And I actually had some family that used to laugh at me, and they're like, we thought you were so dumb. And like, can we borrow a couple rolls?
Exactly. That, I think that's the saddest part is, you know, I get that all the time. Well, if something happens, we're going to TD's house. And I'm like, well, not if you don't know the password. And you're not coming to my house. Just so you know, you're not coming to my house. I'm like, right. We have a lot of people in my house.
Yeah. Yeah. I did have a couple of questions for you. If we still have, I don't know.
Sure, let her rip, man. We got plenty of time.
All right. So are you still doing like a one meal a day? Is that what I heard?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm OMAD. I usually eat at 5. Like I just had some filet mignon. That's what I had for dinner.
Nice. I was wondering. So like, maybe it was like 4 years ago, I did this like 3 month stint of, it wasn't carnivore. It was more keto. And then I was doing 5 days a week OMAD. But man, looking back at pictures of myself during those, after like at the end of this, that 3 month stretch, I lost so much muscle and I know my testosterone was way down. I was wondering, have you had any testosterone issues, or how do you work through that? Or
no, it's all like dramatically improved with ruminant meat. Like yeah. Red meat does the trick. And I sleep better. I feel better. I have more energy. And in conjunction with the intermittent fasting, because basically OMAD is one meal a day. It's intermittent fasting. It's a smaller eating window. And then when you do eat, you're eating nutrient dense ruminant animals. It has dramatically improved every aspect of my life physically and mentally. And it's improved my relationship. And it just, you know, what gets lost a lot is psychologically what food does to you and the effects of improper nutrition and what it does to your brain and your emotions. And yeah, I can say that now. Because of my shoulder issue, I'm not in the elite peak physical condition that I was in, but overall, body, type and everything, I'm in really good shape for having a bum shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah. It is nice. I mean, when you get that feeling of intermittent fasting, being able to just not worry, you know, like when you travel, like I was just in Seattle. I actually almost got kicked out of the cafeteria because they said people couldn't bring your own food. And I'm just sitting there eating I just had a carton of eggs. And they're like, oh, you have to eat from our cafeteria if you're I'm like, man, what soy slop burger? Like, I'm not going to eat that garbage.
So what if you told them you were homeless? Then would they let you eat there with... The little status jujitsu on him.
He said, oh, do you have dietary restrictions? And I was like, no, I just don't want to eat that garbage. it's nice being able to I'll just skip a meal. I don't need to I don't have to go to McDonald's and eat some soy burger just because I need to eat because it's that time of day, you know?
And it's great. I mean, as a Christian, I think it teaches you to discipline yourself largely in part from a Christian, biblical, spiritual perspective, fasting is denying yourself. And it's teaching you that discipline that, you know, you have control over your food and over your desire to eat, and you can absolutely control that and it won't kill you. And it might even help you and make you better. And I mean, I think that that's a Christian principle that in postmodern, obese America, where most pastors are obese, you don't hear a lot on fasting, and you certainly don't hear a lot on, you know, eating in a way that, is good for you. It's like, well, everything's a celebration and, you know, the dessert table is 3 times bigger than the actual food that's available.
Yep. Yeah, we definitely struggle with that. We have a fellowship meal this weekend, and
do we every yeah. Sunday, and it's a challenge, and I think it's, you know, and it's the result of opulence, and it is the result of highly processed. You know, the only reason that this stuff's available at the price it's available at is just it's highly processed. It's mostly hydrogenated seed oils. And if it was all real ingredients, it would be way too expensive. And if it wasn't seed oils in a plastic container, it probably wouldn't be there because it would just be too cost prohibitive.
Yep. Another question I had was, as far as I know, you've talked about how you were previously in finance or something, and
yeah,
how the stock market's bad, and I was wondering what your, I mean, besides the multi-generational property, or maybe that's just it. What's retirement look like? You invest, you know, investments, like if somebody's got this IRA, 401k and stocks are bad, like what's your recommendation? What's your steps forward?
So I work with a group called Private Family Banking, and we practice the infinite banking concept, where you use a specially designed whole life policy as a funnel to invest, create private loans. I mean, there's so much different. You basically control, and you are the banking function in your life. So my investment portfolio strategy is food 401k. So that's our infrastructure. That's our critters. That's our forage infrastructure. That's our 400 fruit trees. That's the ponds at both properties. So we're trying to, you know, secure our water and different things like that. And then, so that's part of it. The other part of it is legacy. So it's living legacy, where as we acquire this dirt, we are bequeathing it in real time to our children and working directly with them so that they can build more infrastructure for themselves in real time, rather than kind of, well, I'm going to pile up all this money, and when I croak, you know, my kids can get it and do whatever with it. And, or there's this other American concept where I worked hard for all my stuff, so I ain't giving my kids nothing. They're just going to have to work hard for it, which is preposterous. I mean, it's obscene. And a lot of these sports figures, you know, that's their mentality, and they end up blowing it or whatever. But so my investment strategy is dirt, infrastructure, living legacy. So then not just acquiring this dirt and infrastructure, but then implementing, which is of necessity, implementing my children to be part of that and facilitating it and making it happen and growing it and building and doing all that thing. And then when it does come to any type of cash or cash reserve, we are using the infinite banking concept and using that as the financial engine. And then the other intrinsic benefit of that is you have an immediate death benefit that's exponentially more than however much you'll put in there immediately, which no investment can do. And then exponentially, you also have the borrowing power against that to fund whatever. Oh, you want a track hoe? You need a new tractor, you need another truck or whatever. You have a financial engine. What has been lost in the Western world? It used to be called capitalism. And then we became a debt-based economy. And we went from capital and capitalism to the opposite, a debt-based economy. And you had guys like Robert Kiyosaki, who I love Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's a great book. Yep. But originally, Kiyosaki was all like OPM, other people's money, you know, and you got to leverage. Well, now he speaks much differently, and he talks about hard assets and gold and silver, which I do recommend, and which we do have gold and silver. That's a great store of value. It's a store of buying power, and it also gives you alternative barter to cross barter for if you don't have certain physical assets that your neighbor's looking for. You still have a modicum of exchange. So that is my investment strategy. It's food 401k. It's dirt coin. It is this living legacy. And see, so if I have a living legacy and if my children love me and they live nearby and we have this like patriarchal community, which is the way that many cultures were for hundreds, dare I say thousands of years, and it comes time to put pops in the old nursing home, my goal, hope, and desire is that my children would say, "No, Dad, we know you wear a diaper and you poop your pants and everything, but we're going to take care of you and we're not going to farm you out to the nursing home. And so we're going to do that." So that's my long-term care strategy as well.
Yeah. Good. That's cool. Yeah. That's good info. I definitely need to look into some of that, private family banking and infinite banking system and start to figure that one out. Well, you mentioned your food for it. That was another one of my questions was, what's your timing? We've got some trees going and bush and berries going, but I'm trying to get them established. So I'm picking all the flowers, but how long have you had your food forest and what's the timeline on when you think it'll be like, you know, really booming? Or
we're finally, you know, we're about 6 or 7 years in. Most of these trees are now about 4 or 5 years old and they're really starting to kick into their wheelhouse. I do recommend blackberries will propagate easily and they'll start to fruit almost immediately. Figs as well. For Idaho, it's going to be a little bit different. You know, apples are going to be really good.
Our zone is rough. It's pretty much apple here.
Yeah. Apples. And do you have any like stone fruits, like maybe peaches or plums that probably do good up there? Maybe.
Yeah. There's some peaches around here. Definitely a lot of cherry. There's a lot of cherries around here.
And I had 4 cherry trees and they all did great. And they even produced within the first 3 years and then they all died like year after year. I lost all of them, which was a big bummer because I really love the cherries. But, you know, you're looking at 4 or 5 years and then you're going to want to have like stagger your infrastructure. So maybe like have your, you know, you're in a really good zone for berries. So you're going to get to have your blackberries and your raspberries and probably your blueberries are going to do really well. So you could focus pretty heavily on that. And they're all very, very propagatable. So, you know, you buy a couple plants, you start propagating them. And that's why I call it a food for. Not only is it going to yield that fruit, right? It's going to yield, you're going to be able to easily propagate this thing and then either sell those plants, give them away, or replant them. And so you're just, you know, creating backups to your backups and, you know, a larger volume of production without having to shell out, you know, 25, 35, 45, 55 bucks a plant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Established blueberries are pretty expensive here, but sometimes you can find them deals at Costco where you're getting a pretty good looking bush for 20 bucks or whatever, but.
Yeah. And then, you know, look into air layering and then air layer right off of those bushes. And you could turn one bush with an air layer. You could turn one bush into 5 and plant those 5 the next season, or maybe even this fall. And you can turn one into 5, like nothing.
Yeah. I'll look into that.
What did you have any other questions, Timothy?
I think that was pretty much it. I mean, I did want to kind of know about your whole strategy. I don't know if you want to talk about it on air, but your whole strategy. Oh, yeah. Monetize with YouTube versus your podcast. And is that, you know, do you, are you starting to get there? Has it been worth it, or what do you, is it more to support the community?
Yeah, it's a labor of love. We enjoy, we love and appreciate our community. It's really kind of fascinating because they jerked the website out from under us, which is kind of the way we were making it all work, making it, I don't want to say worthwhile, because I mean, if I work my day job, I can make an enormous amount of money in a very short period of time. So this absolutely is a labor of love. It's something that we love and enjoy. We love encouraging people. I love your story because your story eliminates all the excuses and all the fear. It's not a lack or absence of fear. It's acting in the face of fear and reaping the benefits, you know. And it's the same thing in business, the same thing in entrepreneurship. You know, if it was easy to own your own business and to operate your own business, everybody would do it. And there would be so much competition that nobody would have work. But the reality is, very few people can and will do it. And then even fewer people will be successful at it. And that is just, that's a microcosm of life in and of itself. And before, you're going to hear a theme, before Walmart, you know, and before all these transnational mega corporations that would give you some, oh, well, I work at the Dollar Tree regional distribution center and I make $25 an hour packing tractor trailers with stuff from China. Look, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's nothing bad about that. But this is this shift of culture, right? And this industrialized, postmodernized, mechanized thing that has destroyed one, agrarianism and agrarian culture. And at the turn of the century, 95% of Americans were entrepreneurial. They either owned their own business or they were in an apprentice type program, developing real world skills that people wanted and needed. And now, through the Prussian propaganda government schooling system, where they teach you to be good little worker bees in the cog for the Chinese mega corporation, you know, we've been co-opted and kind of rocked to sleep. And it's great to see that in this homestead tsunami that you're participating in, that we were on that first little wave of that, you know, a decade ago, where we caught that first little rip curl there on the first wave. It's so encouraging to us to watch this to continue, you know. And it's not like, oh, well, it's too late. Oh, Tim, you missed it. You know, like, there's no more chickens to grow, and too bad you can't eat chicken eggs anymore. And, you know, there's no more cows to buy and grow out and butcher. No, there still is, by the grace of God. By the grace of God, we can still do all these things, and we can get our hands dirty and be part of the process and learn and grow and encourage each other. And, you know, and I want to encourage you. I think you guys are having some kind of homestead event this weekend, right? And I do want to remind everybody of our meetup. It is going to be July 6th from 10 to 2. We extended the hours so there's more times of fellowship and get to hang out. Immediately after our meetup, we're going to be going to East Texas Burger Co. That is in Mineola. It's very close to Bob Wells. So anybody that wants to continue to hang out and party and eat wonderfully glorious ruminant meats with us, we're going to continue to do that. And I do think that Tim is back, and he made it. Welcome back, Tim.
Sorry. Yeah. My power flashed like yours did.
Oh, that's so crazy. Internet, but. Hey, well, you know, they, them, and those, you know, they don't like us talking. I don't make me go all conspiratorial.
I really think that's good.
It's not the first or last time that it's happened. So, but man, I appreciate you coming on. You are an incredible encouragement to a lot of people that have either just got into this space, they're wanting to get into this space, they're wanting to do something different, they're wanting a change, and they're wanting a different life for them and their family and for their children. And it is incredibly admirable. And I can attest to 10 years after the fact that is absolutely worth all the hard work, all the sweat. And I can say that it's instilled an enormous amount of work ethic in our children. And today, you know, anything can happen, but today they still all want to continue and be part of the process and participate and continue with this concept of living legacy and building and growing and doing all the things that make society a society, and doing it outside of any type of synthetic infrastructure where, well, we could do all that stuff, or we could put on Oculus Rift and we could enter the metaverse. And then this time, the next time we lock down, we could virtually go to a church and we could virtually assemble together in the metaverse, you know, and they can pass the virtual offering plate around and we can virtually praise and worship. We could have virtual smoke, you know, virtual smoke and virtually dim the lights to have like a black room with a stage and a drummer and all this kind of cool stuff. But I'm being facetious, but
yeah. Yep.
But yeah, man, it's been great having you on, Timothy. We're going to wrap up. Any parting words? What do you got? What do you got? There's people out there that you did this 2 years ago. There's people that want to do this right now. What do you got?
Yeah. Just want to encourage people to one, find a mentor, reach out, just like I did to TD. Reach out to somebody that's done it before, ask for some advice, let them know your situation, and then be fearless and trust in the Lord. If you're scared and pulling the sheets over your head, you're not trusting in the Lord.
And so now y'all have a homestead gathering or something going on this weekend, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully tomorrow I get to see Joel Salatin again. I was able to shake his hand and talk with him last year. And so this is the second year now. It's down in town in Coeur d'Alene at the fairgrounds. Temple Grandin's going to be there, and Salatin and Anna All Trades and all those YouTubers, they'll be there. So it'll be a good time.
You're going to get to network, meet some local people and create community and all that kind of stuff. It's always a really good time.
Yeah. It was cool. I met a lot of really good people last year, and it was a good networking community.
Great. All right, y'all. Well, we really appreciate you hanging with us through all of the technical difficulties and all that stuff. We really appreciate Timothy taking his time and coming on the podcast here. And remember, y'all, stay fearless, my friends.